You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Well, hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Greg Wasserman, and he shares with us a story of how the events surrounding the birth of his niece and all of his family coming to town turned into a pretty significant life-changing situation for him that he actually now calls a rebirth. So as a note to anybody who is listening, we do talk in this episode about depression and self-harm ideation. It's not a scary or graphic show at all, but now you know before you decide whether or not to listen. Because it's me and this is my show, I also ask Greg what I consider to be one of the hardest questions I can ask anybody, which is to pick one singular favorite movie out of all the movies ever. So if you listen all the way to when I do that, you'll find out how it connects to my pet fish, which is a thing. Yeah. Alrighty then, it's time. Let's do it. Greg Wasserman, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm so happy you're here. Are you ready for a chat?
I'm adulting right now, so I'm definitely happy to be here talking about that, right?
Yes, absolutely. I start all of my interviews asking my guests what part of the world they call home. So where are you these days?
I'm in Los Angeles. Home will always be Chicago.
Very nice. All right. So how long have you been in Los Angeles? A long time.
Yeah, 20 plus years.
All
More than
right,
half my life, but still, Chicago is still home.
That is right about then when I realized that I had lived where I live now longer than I had lived where I was calling my hometown. That's when I stopped saying it. One day I was doing the math and I was like, oh, I don't know if I can claim this anymore. So now I say something like, I grew up there, but I've been here long enough to call it my hometown. Doesn't matter. You don't have to follow my lead, but that is, I had an out-of-body experience one time. Somebody asked me, and I was like, oh my gosh. Can I still claim my hometown? But so in a second, we're going to start the official interview. But before we do that, I want to ask you one more question, which is what is something you do that you do to take care of yourself that could be considered self-care?
Exercise.
Exercise. What kind of exercise do you like?
I live at the base of a canyon, so hiking, especially this time of year, is a big one, or weights and yoga. But physical fitness, something to get the sweat out, to get the muscles going, but also just get the mind somewhat clear.
Beautiful. I love it. All right. The topic of the day that you proposed is how your niece's birthday is a special day for you and that you actually consider it your rebirth. Are you ready to talk about that today?
Yeah, let's bring it on.
Let's do it. All right. So how long ago was this? Or phrased another way, how old is your niece?
She's 2.5.
So this is a pretty recent story, actually. This is pretty recent. All right.
Yeah.
Very good. So you shared with me on the intake form that shortly after your niece was born, you had a very tough conversation with your partner. And that conversation included the fact that you no longer wanted to live. So that's a pretty heavy conversation. Before we dig into that, I thought that maybe you could start by telling us what was life like in a general sense before all this went down? Like, what were you doing? What was going on around you? What was life like?
I grew up in a standard Midwest household. That's why I'll go back to the Chicago roots. Great loving parents, an older brother. You wouldn't think anything was different. If my friends asked, which happened when I told them where I was mentally 2.5 years ago, no one knew that I was where I was in the state of depression I was in. I worked most of my career in media. I burnt out. So when we talk about adulting, like, you know, the grind of continuing to go, and still not feeling satisfied or not finding out why I'm unhappy. But the lead up, I guess, to 2.5 years ago, September of 2023, right? I was in between jobs. I'd lost my job a couple times for no fault of my own. I guess that's what happens when you work for startups, but the mindset I already was in without knowing it was already dark. It was already a place of negative self-talk, negative core beliefs. So when you're losing a job and you internalize that, even though you can convince yourself, like, I did nothing wrong, like, it's literally out of my control, it still just adds to where I was without knowing where I was.
So 2023, that's not far after lockdown. And you're in media, which, I mean, the way you and I actually know each other is through the podcasting industry. So you're in sort of an offshoot of broad. It's been a rocky couple decades for the media industry. Let's just say that. Like, it hasn't been the most stable place to be, building a foundation for a career. Not that there aren't great careers and opportunities and things like that. So a lot of how long have you been in media? Like, how long have you been doing this? Like, how long had you been working at the time?
I mean, technically, when our story starts, I'm out of media. I had finally made the transition out of media, which was
Okay.
great. So I did media sales for about 15 years or
So like
so.
ad sales?
Ad sales, yeah.
Ad sales. Great. It's a wonderful job, not for the faint of heart.
And especially when you are working for usually a challenger brand. So
Yeah.
that was always a thing. It's like I don't have the fancy expense account. There's no way I'm taking these clients to where it's like, as I live on my laurels, it's like life is about time and relationships. I do a great job in continuing that relationship, do a great job of understanding the clients, but at the end of the day, I'm not the one that's taking you to the $500 dinner and wanting and dine you. I just don't have those budgets. So that also makes it difficult as a whole. But
Yeah.
I made it out of media. And back to your point about where we were in COVID, yeah, this was my second job lost in COVID. First one had no, it was COVID. We all lost our jobs. Company folded. And the second one was another piece. And so you're like, I thought I got out of this. I thought I was moving forward. I'm doing an amazing job. I built a $1 million business for this company. Like, how am I losing my job right now? Even though I know it was more of just a friction between myself and the founder. But it led to a breaking point, if we'll look at it that way.
Yeah, so when I talk to people about choices and changes and pivots, there's definitely things, there's different categories, right? When you lose your job and somebody else takes it away from you, that's not a choice you're making. Versus like a career change where you wake up one day and you're like, I no longer want to do this. And they have some similarities in how we think about them and stuff, but career change is a giant upheaval for people. It's on the list of biggest stressors, and you've gone through several changes. So were you, it sounds like you were a little bit aware that you weren't in the greatest of mind space before, like as you were going, but did you know, would you have used the words that you were experiencing depression?
No, I
Yeah.
didn't realize it until that day. I shouldn't say that. I voiced it that day,
Okay.
and there were signs that are already there, which she had picked up on until I finally had to come clean and say where I was truly. And that's always the hardest thing. Like when we talk about suicide, like, when I hear someone's lost because of that, like I know how lonely that now feels. Like I literally have a visceral reaction because I'm like, I don't know their story, but I know that darkness, like whatever they're going through, to not be able to ask for help, to not even know how to ask for help, all those things. Yeah, it hits me.
So you brought this up, so I'll throw some statistics that I found to so that we're not just like idly talking. I don't do this for every single one of my interviews, but I did feel like this was a heavy enough topic that some data would help. This isn't something that we talk about all the time as like a collective in humanity, but it's the 11th highest cause of death in the United States, according to the National Institute of Mental Health. I don't know very much about the National Institute of Mental Health, but it does sound like a very official organization, so we'll give it that. The reason that I just throw that out there is that it's not actually something that's unusual, but there is tremendous social pressure, or I think there is. I don't know. I'd love your opinion if you agree about social pressure and stigma that makes it harder to talk to people about it when you're experiencing the sensations.
And I stats are not my thing, but if you throw in the male component to it, your stats go even higher in that regards. So it's
Yeah, that was all there, but I didn't break it out because time was short and stats on an audio podcast are not like the most compelling audio.
right.
But there's all the subcategories by you can dig in by age range, by profession, by gender. Those are the breakouts. And it's sort of stunning how little attention it kind of gets. Although I do feel like right now there's a lot of emphasis on adult male and adolescent male loneliness and isolation and lack of support. So I feel like that's growing, but it's kind of tangential. It's not directly like, hitting the point where you're making a final decision with your alive status. So before you brought up this conversation with your partner at the time, first of all, this may be too personal of a question, but if it's okay to ask, what kind of partner relationship was this? Were you guys like dating socially? Was it like you were thinking about forever relationship? Were you guys living together? Like how like all of the where were you in
This
this?
was supposed to be the forever relationship.
Supposed to be the forever. So this is a very intense, this was a safe space. Okay. So then with this person you care deeply about, you know very well, supposed to be the forever relationship. Do you remember or do you have any ideas about what were your fears and hopes before you verbalized this very intense thing you were experiencing?
So I guess the answer to the question is the story itself.
Okay.
So, mom comes into town. And I'm on mom duty because my brother is having a baby. And there was,
That's such a grown-up thing to say. It's like, who's got the parents? Okay.
right?
Okay.
And I was already, there was already friction between my mom and I. And let's take a step back in the story. I know, story, we'll do some steps back in
It's
here,
all
right?
good, yeah.
2020 hits, world shuts down, and I realize you could either fight or join in what the world's doing. And what the world was ultimately saying, we're hurt, we're sick. So sit down, everyone, relax, and just do what we've got to do to heal. Or you could take the opposite side and say, no, I'm gonna fight, and everyone else was taking that side. And I'm like, great, I don't have a job. I'm gonna sit at home. I'm gonna get in the best shape of my life because what else am I supposed to do? And I started the whole self-help, reading the books and going down that whole journey, right? So that really started opening my mind to what felt wrong, but not knowing what felt wrong, and not having the ability to actually understand feelings, emotions that I now do. Fast forward 2.5 years later, I knew something was off. And so my mom and I started having more friction as a result of that. So when she came to town, I was already on end with her energy. And I'm like, I'm on mom duty. This sucks. But what
Perfect.
else are you supposed to do? And so the more time I spent with her, the more my energy was just, I didn't understand what was feeling until finally, niece was born on Wednesday. Sunday, I'm supposed to go meet my niece. And I just decided to go hike because that was the only thing I knew that would be able to calm me. That's self-care. That's what I knew would be. Brother calls me on the hike and he's like, hey, are you coming by to meet your niece? And I'm like, no, I'm hiking right now. I'll come by later in the week. It's really a dick move to do, but that's where I was right now.
You were so overwhelmed, just unable to like even consider it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Come back home. Girlfriend at the time was at my place, and she's like, all right, it's dinner time. I'm going home. It's a Sunday night. Monday comes, and she's a Seahawks fan. And I already told her before the season, I'm like, I'm not spending my time at the bar for watching your team. That's not really good. It just didn't. But it was the first game of the season. She spent the whole weekend with my mom and I. The last thing I could have done is repay the favor and go, but I was still overwhelmed. So I chose to work out again. And I'm texting her because I'm following the game. And ultimately, she's like, afterwards, she calls me. She's like, we don't feel like we're aligned. We're not moving towards the path that we said that this was relationship was going to go. And that's when I had to come clean and tell her the fears that I had that I didn't want to be here anymore. Like, yes, we are not moving in the direction you want because I'm moving in a direction that I don't want to be here.
Yeah.
And that ultimately was the catalyst that led to her helping me get the help and support I needed, not knowing, A, that was even an option, right? Like, I did not know, had I not had a partner to say, I think this is what you should do, I would have taken the strategy I was thinking of contemplating, right? So you don't know, A, how to bring that conversation up, B, even vocalizing that, to say those words out loud It's a shock to the system in itself.
Yeah, had you, I'm going to say, had you verbalized it in your head without saying it? Like, were you having this self-dialogue in the same words that you used with your partner, or were you a little bit surprised at the words when they came out of your mouth?
No. So for me, is funny. I laugh at it, but like, I have money in the bank. I've worked so hard to have money in the bank. Why would I leave this earth without money in the bank? So my whole thing was, I'm just gonna go travel. I'm gonna go spend my money, send my savings until the money's gone, and then I'll worry about the next steps after that. That was the form of runaway of ideation I was having, as opposed to like, let's actually do this. I'm like, no.
Okay.
So those comments I had been making for a few months previously, before that then led to where I really was, and the heaviness that I was dealing with.
So yeah, so and you said it's a pretty bold thing. Did your brother call you out on it when you said, "Hey, I am not going to come meet the baby today." Did he point out to you that that was a really kind of bizarre reaction, like I'm going to choose to go for a hike?
Honestly, I can't remember the full
Okay.
reaction, but I would probably say it would be like, oh, okay, would probably be like the awkward response, like, really?
Right.
Without actually remembering what those words were.
Okay, yeah. 'Cause I mean, it is, it's, you were doing the best you could, as I believe that everybody always is. Right. And so the thing that you mentioned this, that people said that they were aware, like the people around you. But the thing I wanted to talk about
No,
was,
they didn't. They weren't
oh,
aware.
okay, that's what I wanted to ask. Like when you talked to your partner and when you brought it up, did other people around you have any sense of what you were going through?
No one. Amy, like, I am a glass half full. You would have no clue the turmoil going on inside because I never show any of that. It would be, I am the quintessential. Give you the shirt off my back, happy-go-lucky. I love talking to people. I'm always outgoing. Like, I love the word gregarious because my name's in it, but that is who I am. I'm Gregarious Greg, right? So no one had an idea. And so when I finally had to go and tell them, I mean, I remember finally going to my brother's place to meet my niece, and I guess now at this point, she was now my ex, was supposed to join me. And so when I walk in, they're like, "Where is she?" I'm like, "Don't worry, don't worry, don't worry." But I cried that whole way because the other side of it is I'm about to meet my niece.
Yeah.
I do not want the energy that I am feeling right now to be the first thing that she associates with. And that was the other side that was killing me. So I'm like, I'm about to meet this brand new 5-day-old being who has no concept of the energy that I am feeling right now. I don't want that. I don't want her to feel that. And that was a hard thing as well.
That's you say it just in conversation, but that's an incredibly hard thing because the situation that you're describing, and I'm not an expert, I'm not a professional, so like everybody should listen to this and ignore things that don't match with the way you see it. But you were so overwhelmed that at one of the like life-changing moments, your mom's in town, your sibling has just had a baby, and what you can do that is you're so overwhelmed that you have to focus completely on yourself and put yourself in nature and you're just holding on for dear life. But you also feel the pressure of, I don't want to bring my emotions into this other situation. You're taking responsibility for somebody else's experience when you're just barely managing your own. And all at the same time, nobody knows that you're going through this. You're like an island floating by yourself, not waving the white flag, really struggling, but nobody knows.
Yeah.
Nobody knows. And I guess that's the reason that I wanted to bring it up, because when we go through life, this is a thing that people are going through all around us. And when somebody reacts in a way that we don't expect, like if my family was like, "Nope, I can't come to this very important life thing," my instinct would initially be like, "Wow, What a, you know, why would, how could they do that to me? And I think the other side of that is if you have some, if you're lucky enough to be in a place where you can say, hey, tell me more, like what's going on with you? That, I mean, not that anybody can, not that I think that your brother with a brand new newborn should have been in that space, but what a miracle it would have been if somebody had been able to be like, hey, what's going on? Why are you not doing this thing that we think is important to you? So.
And it's funny you bringing that up. I got to this point because that was not the reaction I got most of my life.
Okay, tell me more about that.
So I believe we have a fix it in a me too society. And that's basically what I came away after. So I guess after I came out, said where I was, and my ex is like, I think you should check into a program. I did a 3 month outpatient program, which was world life changing, and I think everyone should at least spend a month doing the program that I did. It was incredible, and we can talk about that. But like, I got there because I got the nor negative core beliefs because we as a society are so quick to respond instead of listen. If
Yeah.
someone says something, we're so quick to go either me too, my dad died. Oh, I know what that feels like. My dad died too. It's like, hold on. Now we're not trauma bonding here. We're not trying to go through this connection because it's validating what I. So like we're so quick to do that. And then the other side is we have a fix it society in the sense that you say something and then all of a sudden a person's like, well, have you tried this? Have you done that? No one's even stopped and going like, did you want my help? Are you telling me this because you want me to just listen? Are you telling me this because you want me to respond? Are you telling this because you want advice? Just spending the extra 15 seconds in those three little questions I just said, if we did more of that, then we'd actually be as a society responding based on actually listening, as opposed to responding because we want to talk or we have something to say. And that is
Yeah.
a lot of what I grew up with.
I think a lot of people grew up with this. I you don't know this about me, but I have a theory about one of the places this comes from, which is school. So we teach people how to communicate in school, but school communication is not real life communication, it's not interpersonal communication. But we are trained, right, that you are supposed to learn the material and then they ask you a question, and when you answer, you're going to be judged. And so then we go out into the world and we treat our relationships and our partnerships in work and office and groups in that same sort of response scoring kind of way. And then it's a tool people teach you that it's like, which you're saying. So the tool is, right, when somebody says something, you say, hey, what I hear you saying is this. And then somebody who's trained will be like, what are you looking for here? Can I offer you validation? Can I offer you support? Would you like some help? Do you just want me to sit with you? But you only learn that. The system is upside down. You only learn that if you are in crisis. So you learn that in your marriage when you get a divorce. You learn that in with your kids when you're in, like, you know, therapy with a therapist. You learn that in your job when the HR folks are like, dude, you need to learn how to talk to people. It's like the most weird thing. Like, we should be teaching this to people from the get-go. Some people probably do learn it because of what they study. I assume that people who study psychology probably do learn it, but I studied communication and we did not study that kind of communication. We studied like one to many communication in a variety of forms, how to persuade, how to inform, how to, you know, those kind of things. So it doesn't, I think you're right about that. When you, so I love that you had a positive experience and you got into a program. That's harder to do than a lot of people might think. Like, how did that, walk us through a little bit about how you found some support after you began to talk about it and looking for it.
I mean, the first thing she said was, I think you should check into an IOP. And I'm like, what? A what? And a what? Right? So she gave me the guidance, Googled, IOP programs and figure out what that is. So those that are listening, IOPs, intensive outpatient program.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know what that was either. Okay, good. All right. Intensive
So
outpatient program. Okay.
there's PHP. Oh my God, I'm blanking on what it stands for. And then you have residential. So residential means like I'm literally checking in 24-hour supervision. You're a resident at a place, right? I was not to that level and that degree that I needed that care. PHP was, Yeah, I'm blanking on what it stands for, but it was at a level above and it was outpatient. I went 5 days a week to a mental health clinic. It was group setting from what, 9 to 4 o'clock. We basically did 4 classes a day, 5 days a week. So you're doing 20 classes, and the classes themselves were anywhere from relationship, identity, DBT training, CBT training. Wednesdays were light. So we broke it up with yoga, breath work, art therapy, and real therapy. But you were in an intense program with therapists for 90-minute classes.
That's
It was
intense.
also, but you're also in a group. So now you're
Yep.
taking a person who literally just shared for the first time their emotions in a way that they've never been able to. And you're going, sitting down, going like, all right. Every hour and a half, I want you to check in. How are you feeling? Well, I grew up with three feelings: angry, happy, sad. You ask me, Craig, how are you feeling right now? I'm like, I'm good. We're fine. Like, I don't know how to. And the nice thing is after that program, it's like, oh, I can name this feeling, I can name the body sensation. Most of us aren't trained on any of that stuff, even taught any of that. We're not even thinking about those. So yeah, it was an intense, all altering experience.
That's amazing. So you were really there all day long and then just went home at night, so you didn't have to move in there. Did you have trouble? Was it hard to find a program? Like, I talked to people who really they're not availability, like looking for an intervention for people who are at or near crisis, and it's hard to get people to say yes, come on in.
So the nice thing is because COVID then opened up the realm of mental health, a lot of substance related programs opened up an alternative mental health related program. So for mine, upstairs was substance and downstairs was mental health. Now, a lot of those in the group I was in also had substance as an addiction issues as well, but for the most part, it was all on the depression side, or
All on the depression side. All right. So, do you remember if you, now that you look back, so this is in the rearview mirror and you
yeah.
have some, so when you look back, how long would you think that you were experiencing? And I ask you this, let me back up and say this. When I ask you this, not at all to evaluate what you did or how you reacted, but I feel like there are probably people who are listening who will be at a point in this. They're gonna see themselves a little bit in your story. So, how long now that you look back can you say this is the time frame where I think I was feeling sadness or off before I got treatment?
20 plus years.
So a long time.
Long time. And so, what we came to realize, I should say, I came to realize with the help of the program and therapist is, like I said, love my family. And I love sharing this story. Big fan of Brené Brown. And it helps convey some context here. So, when Brené was growing up and she got sick, amazing parents, they took care of her. Did whatever parents you would expect them to do to take care of their sick child. When they were sick as parents, they never took care of themselves, right? You're adulting. There's a show here. You're adulting. I gotta take care of the family. I gotta
Yeah.
take care of my job. I've got to do all these things. I can't afford to be sick. I can't take a sick day because mom and dad are always on. And the lens that Brené put that through is sickness is a weakness. And so I tell that story because that's a lot of what I put my life on, is a lens of the love that was being given to me. I didn't look at it as love, even though it was coming as a lens of love. I looked at it as a very different lens. And so when I put that all together, I was unhappy for years because I was trying to balance, and this is why I say I'm from Chicago, live in LA. Father was sick. He got sick when I was in college, passed a few years ago now. I'm trying to be a good child and live my life, and the parents want you to live your life.
Yeah.
But I'm also feeling like I'm being a bad child by not going back home, helping my mom take care of dad, do all those things. And so it was always a balance that I was playing internally of how do I live the life I want? while trying to live the life I think they want me to live and they want me to live. And so we came to realize, and anyone that's listening, I'm a black sheep of the family. Like I beat my own drum, I do things differently, and that creates this friction naturally with inside the family. And so I'm trying to be the what they want me to be, but I'm like, I'm not that. And can they accept me as that? And so for years, that's where the unhappiness was, is how do I be myself, but also cater towards what they're looking for? And it's that is always a struggle.
So can I ask another question? Because you said this, you mentioned the friction between you and your mom at the start, and now you've added to that that you grew up with the perception that you were the black sheep in the family and that your family had expectations from you that you were not measuring up to. The question I have is, was that something that was actively verbalized or was it a perception that you had based on behaviors that you were picking up?
Both,
Both. Okay.
right? So the perception, and that's why I tell that Brené story. It's like the
Yeah.
lens that I put on was very much a me thing.
Right.
But there is some level of that outside influence where it's like it's not completely just me.
When you talk to your mom about this, or if you talk to your mom about this, was it the kind of thing where she was aware of, because these conversations with parents go a bunch of different ways, but sometimes you go to the adults in your life and you're like, hey, when I was a kid, you did this thing to me. And they're like, no, I didn't. And you're like, I was there. But other times you go to your parents and you're like, hey, this is this thing that happened when we were kids. Can we talk about it? And they're like, I agree. I didn't know what I was doing. So how did it, is this something that you talked to your mom about and that it lined up that she was aware, or was it more along the lines of, oh, nope, that didn't happen in our house?
Over the last 2.5 years since the program, our conversation, our relationships, my relationship with my mom is exponentially better because we're able to have these kind of conversations.
Okay.
For her, she always used to say, she's like, I look at you as a child. So it's the backhanded comment of like, let me tell you about things. Oh, you're old enough. Why do I have to tell you this? It's like, why are you treating me like a child when you literally just said I'm old enough? You don't have to tell me these things, right? So those kind of comments. And you're like, that was an insult in itself. But you start realizing, and she started to realize, some of those things were her, and some of those things I'm internalizing myself. But you
Yeah.
don't know that. I was on a podcast, and the host is a mother, and she said, I had to sat down with my kids and I'm like, what kind of relationship do we want to have? I'm like, I couldn't even imagine having that conversation with my parents, going like, this is the conversation, this is the relationship I want to have with you guys, and that's not the relationship they wanted. But like, to you actually use those words, hey mom, dad, like, what kind of relationship do we want to have? And if this is the relationship you want and this is the relationship I want, we're not seeing eye to eye, so how do we make this work? Because if you're going to continue to treat me as the kid, even though I'm a 40-year-old adult, there's still a level
Yeah.
of disconnect here. So it's interesting to be able to look at that and reflect on it now.
So some people say that whenever you go home to your childhood home, whenever you go home to the space where your adult parents live, there's always a piece of you that will feel like when you were 8 or 10 years old, like we step back into it. But on the other hand, one of the things that I think that with my experience with my own family, with families I've worked with and coaching, there's always an opportunity to sit down and redefine the roles and identities in the house at the time. Because otherwise the relationships suffer. One of the very common experiences that people have is when kids move away to college or out of the house for the first time for a job or whatever, and then maybe they come home. So they're adults in their mind. They've been living independently for 9 months, 6 months, however long they've been gone, on the like night owl schedule. And they come back home to the family house where it's like, bedtime at 9:30. Parents get up and go to work. That is often a clash. That is often a serious clash between personalities. And if you don't sit down and talk to each other about it, like, then you're people are each having their own fight. They're having their own fight and they never talk to each other about it. And it's like, you got to sit down and say, okay, now you're in college and this is how we're going to live together. And I've done that with all four of the kids that have gone through here so far. It's like, listen, it's a Tuesday. I know you're on vacation, but if you're going to be out late, you got to be out late somewhere else. And then you got to be quiet when you come home because we have to get them to go to work. Like, how are we going to live together and not hate each other, you know?
It's looking back on it, those are conversations we didn't have.
Most people
So
don't.
most people don't. And I think like that when we look at the imperfect adulting, it's like no one's given us the playbook of like these are questions you can ask people. These are the conversations you can have. If you're feeling it, you're thinking it, it's okay sometimes to ask it. And most of us, especially when you grow up in a household where those don't happen, it's odd to go like, this is what I want to happen. Can I
There's
ask
no
this
example.
question?
There's no,
Yeah.
there's no representation of what you're trying to do 100%. One of my one-liners is it's like being a child is not actually as much training for being an adult as an adult as you might think it is. Like having parents doesn't train you to be a parent. You know, watching the adults in your life is not actually training for being an adult because you're busy being a kid. You're busy being a kid, so we all step into it our own way. So, all right. So this is a deeply personal story. It has a lot of value to people. I wonder if you would be willing to share why you feel like it's a helpful story to share with others. Like, why is it important? Do you feel and helpful to continue to share the story that you of your experience?
So I live on LinkedIn. That's where like my social presence is and everything. During 2020, I guess, yeah, during those times, you're stuck at home and you're doing a lot of Zoom, you're doing a lot of webinars and so forth. And I started seeing posts where people, where we saw this switch of LinkedIn being just business, and let me post about my job, let me post about the company, to more of like a Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, where like, hold on, I'm gonna bring in some of my life. Like, I'm not just work, Greg. I am this Greg. I am a human and I'm a full person. So I started seeing some people post and bring out some of their mental health challenges, bring out some of those worlds. They didn't know it at the time, but I was reading that and it was reflecting back to me and like, interesting. And so now that I'm in those shoes, if I can be that one person who reads, or if I guess one person reads my post or reads my story or goes, I'm glad that they spoke up. And maybe they don't get it now, but maybe 2 years from now, they'll be like, I listened to Greg's story. It didn't resonate now, but I'm so glad it stuck with me until I can understand why did that hit me the way it hit me 2 years ago. Because the loneliness, like it's we have a loneliness epidemic going on, but at the same time, most of us, at least myself, like didn't know how to convey. So if I can have one person go, Greg conveyed what I wanted to what I needed. Then that's it.
Yeah, no, that's very powerful. Brené Brown, who you mentioned before, she says this very eloquently when she says the benefit of sharing your story is that you then become an example to somebody else that you can do it, that they can speak up to. And so to hear you say that you had a conversation with someone close in your life, you shared your deepest, darkest secret and your fear, and that they said, hey, here's a solution that worked out. It worked, right? So that other people are going to be going through different things, but it's very hard when to it's very hard to read the label from inside the bottle is one of my favorite phrases, right? And it's also very hard, the mirror can't see itself. Very frequently we need somebody else to come and compliment where we were going. It sounds like you were functioning, you were able to get up, you were able to go for a workout, but anything other than that, you needed a bridge. You needed somebody to offer you a lifeline and say, hey, what about this? And then you were able to do it. You're able to take action. And so this story has a very positive ending. It doesn't always. And so we are thinking about anybody out there that is struggling. So in a minute, we're going to do the final questions. But you said that you lived on LinkedIn. I can verify that that's absolutely true. I want to give you a chance to tell people more about you in a professional sense, what you do, and how you'd love for people to connect with you after the show.
LinkedIn. I believe life is about time and relationships. So I'll talk to anyone because you truly don't know where those threads. I mean, look at how you and I connected and where
Yeah.
we're at today. If I had a crystal ball and I was able to say that that conversation in October would lead us to today and me talking about my journey on your show, I would be a lot richer than I am, right? So find me on LinkedIn, Greg Wasserman. You can't miss it. Nice face, and it says life is about time and relationships. But reach out. I would love to talk because I'm also a relationship broker, and that's what I love to do is the more people I talk to, the way my brain just operates is who can I connect you with, whether it's today or in the future. And so, yeah, that's the best way to find me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. All right, so you did give us a special offer for the audience. You are head of relationships at RSS.com, which I gotta say, I'm so curious about that domain. Like, I don't know if they've had it for like 40 years, but that's like one of the like epic domains of domains. So, this is one of the largest podcast hosting platforms. Everyone should have access to a podcast, and you are offering a 1 month free promo code to the listeners. There's a code RSS Get Started. The link for that will be in all of the show notes, and the easiest way to get that link is always to be a subscriber to imperfectadulting.com, because then I send it to you in the newsletter and you can just click on it. Easy peasy lemon squeezy. So if you're on a workout, if you're on a hike, then the link is there. You just click it. Greg, that's a really generous offer, and I want to say thank you very much for that. Are you ready for the final three questions?
I am. Let's
All right,
go.
let's do it. All right. Do you consider yourself a morning or an evening person, sir?
I don't sleep. We'll talk to the therapist this afternoon about that. But if I had to choose, it's an evening. I'll stay up. I'm an insomniac. So,
All right, so you're an evening person and then a slow morning. All right, very good. Okay, so this
No,
is
I like the alarm goes up.
a. Oh,
The
you're up.
alarms go, I'm up. Yeah. So I don't
So you're
sleep.
just not sleeping.
Yeah.
You've just given it up. It's unnecessary. All right. There have been seasons in my life where I'm like that, but are you a deep sleeper when you sleep?
No, that's why we're
Oh,
working. I just don't sleep.
yeah, I know that. Hopefully, they can give you some help for that. That's a terrible feeling. Do you get the anxiety of like, oh my God, I'm not falling asleep?
I've got pills for that now, so that's helpful.
That's what am I? That's what have you ever done the countdown where you're like, all right, so if I fall asleep now, then I can get 5.5 hours of sleep. But I am not like a great sleeper, but when I'm asleep, it's like I'm awake. I'm action oriented when I'm awake, and then when I sleep, I'm like a toddler. I'm like, oh, I'm out, 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 out. So all right, so this is a hard question. It's a tough question. It really is. Don't get scared. But if you had to pick one movie and only one movie as your all-time favorite, could you do it? And if so, what would you pick?
Since I'm being put on the spot, I'll go with Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, nice. All right. Good
That's
job.
my high school. So
Is it
the,
really?
yeah. So John Hughes was an alumni of our high school. So Breakfast Club was based on our Saturday detentions, which when I got one, I'm like, yes, I can live this movie. Nothing like it. But Ferris Bueller, yeah, that was one. The outside of it is our high school. So I have a good childhood friend of mine was in the movie, but yeah, that Chicago and from a podcast, since I work in podcasting, that's also one that I coach people on. It's like break the fourth wall as a podcaster, just like Ferris Bueller brought you on his day. It's not just like his day off, but like you feel like you're on his day with him. So yeah, that's the movie to go
What you
to.
think? Right, very good. I love Ferris Bueller, the movie. I think it's a fun movie. I have a fish named Ferris. Not because it's my absolute all-time favorite movie, but because it works because of the alliteration, like fish, Ferris. Very good. All right. If you won the lottery, like an enormous lottery, like a multiple hundred million dollar Powerball type lottery, right? What is the first thing that you would buy for yourself?
A trip somewhere.
Do you have any idea where? Like, do you have a bucket list trip that's out there that would be a big splurge? Remember, you've got hundreds of millions of dollars to spend on this
Machu
trip.
Picchu would be the first, is the highest on my list to go do that because they're going to shut it down eventually, and that's just a great wonder to go see. So, yeah, I
Do
would.
you want to walk up with the do you want to do the like because there's like a 3 or 4 day hike up, or you can go up in like the bus or the train?
Oh, I mean, if I have unlimited funds, I'd be having like, what is it, like the Sherpa next to
Yeah.
me that's carrying all my stuff and go on the 3 days? Like, that would be perfect.
All right. That sounds like an awesome trip. That's it. Greg Wasserman, thank you so much for being an amazing guest today on the show.
Thank you so much, Amy, for having me.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obviously, again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.